Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lossworth. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
So I was doing some business in Florida this weekend, and after that, my father-in-law and brother-in-law went out to some breweries. You know, we had some Cinnamon Toast Crunch Ale in Florida. Oh, we had some German Chocolate Cake Porter. We had a Pine IPA, which is pine from Oregon. We had a Caramel Macchiato Ale, a plethora of good drinks. And so we got back that night, and my brother and I, Sean, we wanted to watch the Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, director's cut. So we sat down, and I got the Blu-ray, I put the disc in, and we're watching. We're like, you know, nothing's really different. Like, we sat there for a long while. We watched it for about an hour and a half. Like, is this really the director's cut? And, like, we sat there going, I think that's different. I'm like, but I was like, I don't know anything that's different in here. Turns out I put in the wrong disc.
Oh, no.
That sounds like a soul-crushing
defeat. And we watched the theatrical cut for an hour and a half, or like an hour, something like that. And we were just like, I was like, really? Nothing's different. And I was like, did he say that? Like, I think we convinced ourselves on one line. We're like, that wasn't in there. And I was like, where is this? And then eventually I was looking in the Blu-ray the next day, because we didn't finish it because it's so freaking long.
Yeah.
It's basically just a longer version of the theatrical cut. But, and then I looked in the Blu-ray and I was like, oh.
So when you had that realization, were you like, Martha?
I was like, Martha! So, yeah, I watched the theatrical cut again.
I'm sorry. I don't wish that on my worst enemy.
I had Jolly Ranchers, though.
Right. John Lovegood, how many times have you seen the theatrical version of Batman vs. Superman?
Just suffering through it the one time in the theater.
I think once should last everybody a lifetime. There's a saying, like, I read online, like, it doesn't matter how long you've been watching Batman vs. Superman, you still have 2 hours left to go.
poor Batman vs. Superman, like, and poor Mark and his director's cut fail.
Yeah.
You live and learn, I guess.
You gotta live and learn.
Yep.
All right, I think it's time to start the podcast like we usually do, and that's with listener questions. John Lumgood, I think you got questions for us this week.
Our first question actually comes from a friendly co-promoter and a fellow podcaster from, this is from Billy Crash, the host of the horror podcast, The Last Knock on iTunes. And Billy Crash asks, Hollywood produces remakes to play it safe and hopefully gain a return on their investment. However, what films do you definitely think need to be remade?
Breakdown.
No, Mark.
Okay.
The Kurt Russell classic.
Yes.
Here's the reason why. Classics are always remade, but they shouldn't be, because you can never recreate the personality. All right? Breakdown. Nobody watched it. No one remembers it. And I think it'd be a good idea, because in our culturally, like, our technology-obsessed culture, to make a movie where, you know, and maybe switch it. Make it a woman looking for her husband, right?
Looking for a kidnapped Kurt Russell.
Yeah, like Mary Elizabeth Winstead is hunting for the kid from Hush, John Gallagher Jr., right? And so in a culture in our day and age where we're so obsessed with, like, phones and I don't know, whatever else, technology-wise, you know, she, like, has no service, phone is gone, and she has to hunt down her husband, like, just using, like, Lewis and Clark stuff.
1996 yeah. technology.
Well, like a compass and reading the stars.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, you have to abandon, like, all your, like, you know, there's no, there's no GPS. You can't call 911. You have to like, you know, what's funny. It should be a whole funny joke about her having to find like street signs. Like, oh, I got to take a left. Where?
I'm still looking for it.
She's like, why are these signs separated by 50 miles?
What's a street sign? You know, like, she wouldn't be like that, obviously, but like, she has to like, oh yeah, 3 miles, 2 miles. And it's all about like this woman, you know, using what we were given to rescue her husband. I think that'd be a good movie now. I think just taking our culture out and taking away what we thrive so much on and can't deal without, and having like a really good gritty thriller where you could swap the roles like Evil Dead, I think that would really work. I think a break, and it wasn't that popular. And like, you know, okay, so it goes, you know, the trades come out and everyone's like, Mary Elizabeth Winstead starring Breakdown, the remake. People aren't going to lose their minds. Like, no guy in his basement is going to go, no, Martha! You know, like, like, no one's going to lose it. Like, they're just going to be like, huh.
Hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
It's like, and make it like, you know, throw in like a duel. Like, throw in a little, make it a duel Breakdown remake. And have her, like, Prius, that's really bad. Have her Honda CRV being chased down by a semi.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like I think it would be like, and then, you know, the cars nowadays aren't as good as they were in Duel. So it could be like a really good thriller cat and mouse movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can't be a Prius though. Cause like a Prius, like you don't need a truck. I could tackle that.
Yeah. Like, you know, like in the background, you'd be like rolling it like a tire for your MMA training. But I think Breakdown and just because I don't like cult classic remakes. I mean, they're inevitable. It's going to happen. And I don't like classics being remade because they're never as good. Like the Sabrina remake. That's a weird thing to call
it. I love the Sabrina remake.
Yeah, but the original Sabrina like is amazing. It's you know, Holden and Bogey and Katharine Hepburn. And like it's just such like a – such a – wait. Is it Capri Hepburn? Oh, it's Audrey Audrey Hepburn.
It was one of them Hepburn girls.
Yeah. It's one of them people.
Yeah.
But like – I don't know. I just think Breakdown.
Yeah. No, I'm fully on board with this. As long as you got Kurt Russell coming back.
He plays the stuntman Mike evil guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could be the kidnapper, actually.
Yeah.
You know, because the kidnapper comes off like all nice and polite for the first half.
He walks out with those baby blues.
Mm. He still got the beard from Hateful Eight.
It's growing around him. It's steering the wheel.
Yeah.
So wait, you know, I mentioned tackling a Prius. No, we mentioned like all the time with the axe and the fish.
Yeah.
In Snowpiercer and Chris Evans, and then the tackling and everything. You know, I just learned today. I swear to God, for years and years and years, I thought Chris Evans was like 6'4", 240. I thought he was big. He's 6 feet tall.
Oh,
he is under 200 pounds.
Yeah.
What a crime.
Now I feel like I could like knock over a bunch of Chris Evans, like Evans's, like they were bowling pins.
I don't think it would be that easy.
Under 200 pounds, Mark.
I think he would see you lumbering towards him. Like if
no, man.
You couldn't sneak at like Levin Good. I know you. You couldn't sneak up on me.
But me, you see, you haven't seen me. When I was 235, you've just seen me in the 250s plus.
If you're leaning,
I was 235 last year.
If you're leaning against a wall or something, the wall's leaning in. I'm like, there's some guy waiting to jump me on the other side of that
wall. But like, that's what I thought Chris Evans was. I thought he was like a 240-pound brick shit house, and it turns out he's like, I don't know, 192.
Well,
I don't know, 11 good. Chris Evans has that patent arm grab.
Yeah,
I can see you charging towards Chris. But the last second, he just grabs your arms like, John, you got to stop. And you're like,
and gazes at me with those eyes.
Yeah. And Lemigood's like, yeah, you're right. I'm being a dick right now.
Like, yeah, if like Roger Moore did that arm grab on you, you'd feel dirty.
Yeah.
But like when Chris Evans does it, you're kind of like, and he's like, stop.
Dude, if Roger Moore grabbed me like that, I'd be like, I need an adult now.
It's like, John, you're better than this.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
It's like, ah, he just gets me, man. I don't know how he does it.
I think I derailed the Snowpiercer long enough. Lazabeth, what's your answer to this question?
I actually had two movies come to mind. They're both kind of superhero movies that came out before the big superhero boom that's happening right now.
Can I guess?
Yeah, go for it.
Spawn.
Ooh!
No, but that's a pretty good one, actually. That's a good one, though. Yeah,
I quit.
So I think Dick Tracy would be really cool.
Oh, yeah.
For a remake.
With Josh Brolin.
That'd be pretty cool. So I think, you know, Dick Tracy, it's like he's not a superhero. He's like a detective. But I don't know. I think, I actually like the original movie a lot. It just hasn't really, it doesn't really hold up well over the years. I think if you make a remake, make it really stylish looking, like Sin City, you know, was. Like, I think that would do really, really well. I don't know. Also make it super violent.
Oh, yeah. The only thing I remember about that movie are the costumes.
Yeah. I think
I feel like it was all style.
Yeah. Which lends itself very well to the Sin City type aesthetic.
I remember a kid eating soup.
Yeah.
Wasn't Madonna in that as Breathless Mahoney? Am I remembering that right? Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was a very colorful movie, so... No, I think Dick Tracy would be a great candidate for a remake. My second choice would be The Phantom with Billy Zane.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Do you remember that? Like, I want them to remake the movie, but I want Billy Zane to come back and wear the same suit he wore in the original movie.
Just make, like, a $200 million sequel, and everyone would be like, what?
See, Billy Crash asked what needed to be remade. I think that The Phantom needs to be unmade.
I think right now, we're associate producers on this project. Uh-huh. We need a Phantom sequel, $200 million. Brendan Fraser's the bad guy.
Hey, if Billy Zane's not available, we can get Ben Affleck. Because he was in Phantoms, so why not have him in the Phantom?
And he was the bomb in Phantoms.
Dude, you're going to be the bomb Phantoms in the Phantom,
the best
yo.
Unlikely sequel to Phantom.
I like it. So what you're saying is if Billy Zane's too busy Billy Zane-ing,
yeah,
then we'll bring in Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
And if Ben Affleck's too busy, we'll bring in Brendan Fraser to play the hero, the villain, and the hero's son.
I think that would do really well.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, those are my two choices.
Well, I mean, one of mine would be what's already happening, and that's The Craft. And I don't really think The Craft needs to be remade, but I think that for a young generation to appreciate it, it just unfortunately has to be more contemporary. I don't think they'll watch a 1996 movie as a 16 or a 20-year-old today and like it as much. But, like, whatever, they're redoing The Craft anyway, so that's off the table. I don't think we need yet another Frankenstein movie, but I feel like I personally need to see that once rumored Guillermo del Toro Frankenstein movie. But again, you know, that's not so much a need. For me, the need is Logan's Run. And I remember a year or two ago, they were rumoring they were going to do it with Matt Damon. And like Logan's Run was like really badass back in like 1976. Not that I was around to remember it, right? But I mean, it was like really badass at the time. But now I can only enjoy it from nostalgia. Like it's just a bunch of people running down halls with a blinking plastic gemstone like glued to their hand, mm-hmm. you know, and like the urgency feels almost comical when Michael York looks nervous. And I don't know, like I feel like for people to love that particular classic sci-fi, I think that it really needs a remake. And it stuns me that It's Star Wars era, but it feels a lot older than Star Wars era. It feels original Star Trek series era.
Mm-hmm. So who do you think would star in Logan's Run remake? Well,
I'd like Billy Zane to stick with that Matt Damon idea that they once had, but unfortunately Matt Damon just keeps getting older and older as they delay this project.
That happens.
And like... And you know what else? Like, I don't like the idea, but I read that they were trying to actually reboot this back in 2000 or remake it in 2000 with Leo DiCaprio.
Hmm.
I wouldn't have been thrilled with that. And now, like, I don't know, Ryan Gosling?
That's logical. But he's remaking – or he's doing a sequel to Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Is he in that? He is in that? Okay. Yeah. Well, actually, you know, that's just like 6 years apart.
What about Paul Dano?
I think he's too gangly.
Dane DeHaan.
Who's that?
The bad kid from Chronicle.
Hmm. He's a little gangly guy. He's got a, I mean, if he filled out a little bit, because he was just a little like teenager. Like it, we can't have someone too skinny. Like I don't want DJ Squalls up there.
Oh, I was about to mention that.
I want DJ Qualls.
Seeing him run would just be comical, running down the hallway.
He would be shooting everyone in the crazy face that Eddie Griffin taught him in.
DJ Qualls is my go-to suggestion for every movie casting.
I think they should have cast him in 50 Shades of Grey.
We are remaking Singing in the Rain. I'm thinking DJ Qualls.
I don't know, man.
Dancing
we use them on
like
the
Jack Skellington. Oh, mercy. All right.
Joel Edgerton.
Okay. So I think the answer to this question is what? What do you think?
DJ Qualls.
DJ Qualls, yeah. DJ Qualls. I think that's the answer to
remake him.
I forgot what the original listener question was.
So I think DJ Qualls should star in Pretty Woman because she gets a remake.
Mm. So is he the prostitute, I'm assuming?
Yep. And Charlize Theron is the rich businesswoman.
Oh my God. But he's just the most gangly prostitute ever.
What's with you and gangly today?
Hey.
Well, I mean, we're just talking about gangly guys. You keep mentioning gangly people.
Maybe Charlize Theron likes likes having not a lot of meat on her bones.
DJ Qualls has less meat than Jared Leto did in Dallas Buyers Club.
Oh, let's not go that far. Well, okay. Maybe he is. He's a pretty skinny dude.
I want to see this movie.
Yeah.
And it would be called Pretty Man.
Look, I want to see it because I love DJ Qualls, right? He's wonderful, but I just don't know about him as a prostitute. Is he like also a virgin? Is it like a mix of 40-year-old virgin and Pretty Woman prostitute?
He's been at it for years. He knows what's going on.
Mm.
You know, he's like has a heart of gold. He you know, he wants to really secretly make music.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty man. Pretty man.
John Limigan, what's our second listener question?
Second listener question comes from Joe from Prattville, Alabama. And Joe asks, what would be the plot of Pokemon Go if it was made into a horror film?
It'd be like Battle Royale.
Really?
It would put kids on an island. And
a whole bunch of kids on an island?
And whoever has the most Pokemon gets to leave.
So they're just like slaughtering, like hard R-rated Japanese horror slaughtering Pokemon, like with red mist and shit and bazookas.
Well, yeah, kids, yeah, blowing each other up, you know, tons of gore. And it's, you know, they're stealing each other's Pokemons. And so whoever leaves with the most Pokemon at the end, like how long do batteries last?
Cell phone
on an
batteries?
iPhone.
A
long time now, right? Like, don't they last like 6 hours or something?
Okay, so six
well,
hours.
I think the app kills it, though. Kills the
yeah.
battery. So.
Okay, so you have 4 hours.
Okay, yeah.
And you have to find the most Pokemon.
Hmm.
And if you kill somebody, you get their Pokemon.
So this is like Highlander.
And it's just
like Highlander.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Highlander meets Battle Royale. And ooh. Then they also put like a big lizard on the island to add like death.
Anyone listening who doesn't know, by the way, Battle Royale is like a 2000 Japanese horror release that's just school kids murdering each other.
It's wonderful.
Until there's only one.
Yeah.
That's what Battle Royale is.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty special. You know, it's interesting, this question, because this question, by the way, is coming from someone who, I mean, he likes movies like The Next Guy, Joe, but he's not like a movie guy like us or like a lot of our listener question providers. Like, it's occurring to me that I'll bet that in a year we're going to have a Pokemon Go movie. It might be an animated movie, but I'll bet we'll have one. And then within months of that, sci-fi will release some ridiculous Pokemon Go sci-fi pseudo R-rated thing to follow it up. I mean, I think that he's going to literally see his answer on the Sci-Fi Channel in about 70 weeks.
I think
so. We're just sitting here with a fortune, like a fortune teller with a crystal ball. Laz, what is your crystal ball divine for you out of this answer?
Well, I think my crystal ball is actually tuning into the news from a while back. I think what, I think the first couple weeks of the game's release, there was a news report where a girl, like in Wisconsin or Wyoming or something like that, she actually found a dead body in a creek when she was playing the game. Because the game involves you actually going outside.
So she Pokemon Stand By Me'd.
Yeah, pretty much. So I'm thinking like a Pokemon Go horror movie. I think it'd be interesting if the kids were playing like the Pokemon, like the locations where they had to go. They keep finding like dead bodies and whatnot.
And Richard Dreyfuss is going to narrate it.
These kids would have no idea where they're walking because they're not paying attention. I remember I was working on this movie and we were keeping everybody on the set. And then all of a sudden, we're about to hit a major scene. This guy is walking through the set staring at his phone. Somehow he got past all the security and barricades because he was just staring at his phone. Like he wasn't even, and they looked up and went, whoa, 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 and I kind of ran away. This guy bypassed security and no one even realized it.
Listen, like, if you look like you belong, then
you could lead these kids to, you know, hell. And they'd be like, is there a Pokemon in there? All right, I'm going back.
Yeah. I think the guy who was scaling Trump Tower, a couple days ago, there was a joke. It was like, man, there must be like a really good Pokemon on top of there. So, I don't know. I think a Pokemon Go horror movie would actually turn out really well. I don't know if Nintendo would ever allow that movie to be made. But, you know, we'll see.
Yep.
So what's the answer to this question, do you think?
I was kind of come out with like this amalgam of existing movies. Like I want to think that it's not going to be like Pixels, all right? That is not the video game movie that we're getting. We're going to get something that's more like the format of Mortal Kombat meets the sense of humor of Sharknado. So the Sharknado sense of humor and zaniness. And every time you find a Pokemon, it's in a totally different setting, like all those fighting games. But it's, you know, it's just always the same fighter. It's like you're following the same fighter, character, player, getting his Pokemon. So instead of Scorpion versus Liu Kang, it's your star of the movie versus this Pokemon and then that Pokemon. Every time it's in a different lair or a different, like, scene.
I have no idea what this movie's about.
It's Pokemon. It's Pokemon. It's a Pokemon movie. What?
I think there's been like, a million animated Pokemon movies? So.
Oh, yeah.
Why not do a Pokemon Go
movie? And then someone just jumps on screen with a white jar of fluid. I bet you didn't think I could find it this time of year.
Pure Bulgarian? Yeah.
I worked in a theater when that first Pokemon movie came out. It was a mess.
Oh, you hated it, right? I remember you telling me like horror stories or war stories about it.
That was a nightmare. I hated that theater.
Wait, hold on. There was an American theatrical release. Yeah,
it was a big hit.
I think it was the first movie, right?
Yeah. And yeah. I had to, it's like families went in there and just threw their popcorns everywhere, then dumped their sodas on it, then river dance for 90 minutes during the film.
I don't know if that's good or bad. It sounds bad.
Well, the floor was like, you couldn't even see the floor.
Because they had a lot of screaming kids banging popcorn all over the place.
I mean, it was feral kids chewing on the seats.
Throwing rocks at Road Warriors.
That's right. I think the tagline for Pokemon Go could be like, be careful what you look for. Don't, don't, don't.
So I think that's the answer to our question. Don't, don't. There you go. All right. Thank you to our wonderful listeners for those amazing questions. Sorry we didn't answer them the way you wanted them to.
We answered them the way that the universe wanted them answered.
That's right.
Right. And the universe is very mysterious and random.
You can't force a mushroom to grow by looking at it. You got to plant that seed and let it grow naturally.
Well, you plant a mushroom seed?
I don't know.
You just plant that spore and watch it parasitize, and then a banana grows.
Listen, I'm not a mushroom farmer, so I'm just gonna have to take your word for it.
Listen, when I was a mushroom farmer, we had seeds.
Okay, all right. So now that the mushroom farming case has been solved, time to move on to the next.
Mow a field of mushrooms? It's terrible.
Oh, you kidding me? I just pre-dices them for salad. You should be mowing mushrooms over lettuce.
Yes. Oh, that's like a nature's salad bar.
Mm. Yeah.
And then put some tomato spores.
It's time to hit up a Sizzler. Actually, are Sizzlers even still around?
There is one in the mountains of Georgia, but it's Western Sizzlin', so I don't think that's the same thing.
Oh.
I kind of want to make a trip to go there now.
Western Sizzlin'?
Western Sizzlin'.
Is it
Mark,
like
what's our topic for today? What's our topic for today?
Mushroom seeds. I feel like dum-dum. All right, so actually, I feel like Amanda Waller's stupid plan. Spoilers, guys, spoilers. Today, actually, before I talk about the topic, just let me stare out this window and finish this barbecue rib that I've been working on.
Can I have some?
I'm just going to stand by a window at 2 a.m. and eat barbecue ribs.
Can I have some?
Think deep. Yeah, no.
Okay.
I'm just going to sit by that window.
Well, can we have some of the life, sauce?
And I'm just going to eat these barbecue ribs.
Okay.
Did no one notice that in the movie?
Wait, who was eating ribs?
You never noticed that? Spoiler. Wait, what movie are we talking about? Suicide Squad.
Who was eating ribs?
Rick Flagg.
When?
There's that scene where he's like looking out the window and he's eating ribs. He has
I didn't catch that.
He has this big hunk of meat in his hands at like 2 a.m. while the Enchantress lays in the bed next to him.
Well, I guess he knows how to be a man then. That's
like,
good.
It's like, why is he eating ribs at 2 a.m.?
Because he likes the Chappelle show and he has no fear of mud, but... Wait,
you guys didn't see that?
I mean, maybe every listener that's listening right now is just totally like nodding in appreciation of you catching that, but I feel like you're hallucinating.
No, he was eating ribs. Maybe I was on mushrooms.
I don't know. Maybe Rick Flagg's low-key rib game is just like too strong for me.
Yeah.
I did not notice him eating ribs ever.
Yeah, he's just chilling eating ribs by the window.
I did not, but, see that.
In case you didn't know, we're going to talk about DC's latest winner, Suicide Squad. it's already made $300 million worldwide, and it didn't start off well. I mean, if you've been paying attention to movies, you've heard about the Joker, and you know he sends like atomic missiles to his co-stars and dead pigs and used condoms. Suicide Squad is a movie about a bunch of ne'er-do-wells who have to team together to prevent a dum-dum's stupid plot from backfiring in their faces.
It was a really, really stupid plot.
So Suicide Squad, directed by David Ayer, DC movie. I think I just broke down the plot. But, yeah, it's, this cut is the director's cut. There won't be another R-rated cut. Someone's actually suing them because there wasn't enough Joker in it because they advertised him in the trailers. But
he was in like five or six scenes.
Yeah, it's. I will say, this movie exists on the screen, and you feel some emotion. You laugh a couple times, and then you're kind of like, oh, brother. And then CGI blobs fight each other. And people survive many helicopter crashes.
All right.
I feel like emotion and excitement and satisfaction drop at an alarming rate over time as the movie progresses.
Yeah.
Like, so the plot, right, we have this squad of they're not really death row inmates. They kind of just make it seem like they have sentences that are going to be reduced. So these guys are going to have their sentences reduced for teaming up together for some cause for the next, in quotes, Superman, right? Because what if the next Superman, instead of trying to save us, tries to take over the world? Who's going to stop them? We need metahumans to fight metahumans. So the first 40, 50 minutes of this movie is what would normally be the first 20-minute, 30-minute intro of a movie because we have like six characters to introduce. But I liked it, right? I don't know about you guys. I liked being introduced to the characters, and even though that kind of like private dinner at a swanky restaurant where they're discussing putting together this team seemed a little over the top. Whatever, like, it's a comic book movie, I was okay with it.
But they introduced Will Smith, Deadshot, and Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn, and then they introduce them again. So we get an introduction to two characters, and then we're introduced to them again. And Viola Davis, I like her as an actress. She's fine. But her character, Amanda Waller, kidnaps a 6,500-year-old witch who infected the body of an archaeologist who was stupid enough to pop the head off an ancient statue for some reason. I mean, if I found an ancient burial site, I wouldn't pop the head off of an ancient thing.
Right. Right there. Let's go right there, right? So they find it, and they realize that she's this ancient, super powerful thing, and they realize how to control her, right?
Yeah.
So obviously, right, I'm saying this in italics and a parenthetical question mark, but obviously they hired some completely confidential, almost black ops equivalent anthropologists or historians to look into the history of the artifacts there, you know, right? That because they realized there is this mystic, maybe goddess sorceress, and in history she was once worshipped as a god. Maybe they weren't told that, but they probably researched that. And so when she later escapes them and releases her brother, so there were two of these godlike entities, one that was analogous to her in history. And this is a total surprise to this agency that can afford to finance and manage six or seven of the most deadly people on the planet.
Yeah. And then so Amanda Waller's plan to keep the Enchantress in check. So the Enchantress will like go to Iraq and grab military plans and come back, blah, blah, blah. But she has the Enchantress heart in a box. Whenever the Enchantress acts crazy, she starts stabbing the heart. So she has the Enchantress in check. But the problem is that the Enchantress is also dating Rick Flagg, who's Viola Davis, Amanda Waller's right-hand man. He's like a super soldier who has nothing super. He's just a badass dude. So we have like this guy who's in love with a woman, but she can become a witch, and she's under control by Amanda Waller, who can crush her heart whenever the Enchantress acts crazy. However, I mean, the Enchantress just gets the heart.
Wait, and that heart is just like in The Last Witch Hunter. Yeah. It's like a phylactery of her power.
Yeah, and so she grabs the heart, obviously. Then she rises up her brother, and they shoot a cloud of CGI into the sky. They raise a bunch of ashy bad guys who she kisses, and she turns them into, I don't know, charcoal men.
Good Lord.
So she smooches everyone around town. They become charcoal men. And then they're like, we got to send it in the Suicide Squad. And then with the Suicide Squad, they have Killer Croc, Diablo, Captain Boomerang,
yes.
Slipknot, Deadshot.
Harley Quinn.
And
Katana is really Katana. Just trying to manage them.
Yeah, and like, so they send them in to
Pyro.
Oh, Pyro. Right? To make up for their stupid like mistake. So it's their fault.
So the Suicide Squad is essentially there to fight one of the members of the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, who's running amok.
And her brother.
Who's running amok, smooching people all over town.
Like, so where do we even – the characters. How about we start with the characters, right? We talked about introducing the characters. Like, for me, I thought Rick Flagg was good. Right. I thought that Captain Boomerang was really just occasional good comic relief.
Yeah, and he's a brony.
He's a brony who drinks energy drinks when shit goes down and says funny things with an Australian accent. But I thought that like Will Smith and Margot Robbie, Will Smith was very, very good, especially in the first half. But Margot Robbie, to me, in this was excellent. Her character, her craziness in the first half specifically. Let's ignore how they wrote her in the second half. But I thought that she captured the character pretty well.
Yeah. No, yeah, she did a solid job.
And I feel like if Will Smith was maybe kind of like the moral and the heart of this movie, that Margot Robbie was its absolutely insane soul.
I actually thought the best relationship was between Rick Flagg and Deadshot. Like the two of them. I liked Rick Flagg the most because he's a human surrounded by all these idiots. Superhumans or whatever. And, you know, he's still a tough guy, and he and Deadshot, Will Smith, kind of learn to respect each other towards the end. I kind of like their relationship.
Yeah, their banter was a lot of fun. I appreciated that relationship, too.
Yeah.
And then there's the Joker, right? We should mention that, like, I thought that they'd be either trying to capture the Joker or capture Batman. And it turns out that Joker was basically like a huge parallel side plot.
Yeah. And he had a lot more footage, and Jared Leto's been really pissed off because they cut most of it. And so he's like in character for 6 months, and he was on screen for 10 minutes. But he kind of reminded me of, I think the guy's name is David from The Guest. It's like the Terminator met Alien from Spring Breakers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Alien James Franco, right?
Yeah, yeah. So like, he's like this, you know, and also what I don't get is this guy basically could run through everybody and kill everybody. And at the end, he easily gets Harley Quinn, spoilers, out of jail at the end. But he should have just done that from the beginning.
No, that's too easy.
This movie did yada yada a bunch of stuff.
And I mean, I think if I watch it again, like, it'll be a nice little FX movie or HBO movie. What do you think, Lazarath? We haven't gotten your opinion.
So as far as the Joker, a lot of people were obviously bemoaning like the lack of the Joker in the movie. I'm taking the opposite approach. I feel like there was too much Joker in the movie.
He really had like 6 or 7 scenes. It wasn't a small number.
That's not to say like I didn't enjoy the character. I love the character. It was always fun to see Jared Leto pop up and do something really weird. I love his kind of gangster pimp interpretation of the Joker, by the way. It's very it was kind of unexpected, even from watching like all the previews. I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. But so I like the Joker. But the reason why I wanted there to be less of him in the movie is because he was basically a huge distraction to the actual plot of Suicide Squad.
He very much was,
because he wasn't actually part of the Suicide Squad, right? So, like, every time he showed up, it's just like, well, we have to kind of take away screen time from, like, the other characters, like Captain Boomerang. Like, let's just not even go into his backstory too much. Or, like, Katana. Or, like, you know, we got a little bit of Diablo, but it's just like, I think Jared Leto should have gotten the same amount of screen time Ben Affleck did in this movie. You know, so, it was just enough to kind of tantalize you and like thinking like, oh man, like I want to see more of this. But like, they didn't overdo it with Ben Affleck. They should have taken the same approach with Jared Leto. I think they should have showed just enough to kind of tantalize, like, you know, the history he had of Harley Quinn. I'm just like, oh, that would have been cool. But it would have been nice to see like the actual Suicide Squad members kind of get, like, their own screen time, just kind of breathe, you know?
Like, and they didn't earn it. At the end, there's this scene where I think Diablo's like, you know, one of my families died. I got to protect my new family. And I was like, oh, brother. I'm like, because they never had time to even bond in this.
I know.
He was basically just grumpy and I'm not doing anything, like, the whole movie.
So this, so how about this? They form this crew, right? And of metahumans to fight metahumans. Somehow the Joker gets a hold of Enchantress, right? And it's Joker, Enchantress, and like a bunch of other bad metahumans. And they kill a bunch of regular soldiers, whatever, you know, something happens. So they have to send in this crew. So metahumans are going to the top of this building, like the Raid, to battle other, or Judge Dredd, if you haven't seen the Raid, or Dredd. People are like, ah, to go battle other metahumans, not faceless ash blobs who got smooched. I think it would be really cool to have metahumans against metahumans. And then it's kind of like, okay, well, we need to unleash them on these guys because we don't care about them. We don't want to lose any more men. So they're going in after these guys. And the Joker could be the bad guy. And it could be all like an attempt to lure Harley to him, blah, 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 get the bat. I don't know. But that would have been so much cooler than a CGI thing. I don't even know what that was supposed to do. What was that CGI tunnel to the sky supposed to do?
Okay, it was supposed to destroy the world.
By the way, that reminded me a lot of the end of RIPD.
Oh, gosh.
But remember, when she woke her brother up from out of nowhere to the knowledge of the universe and the agency that awoke the witch, but when she woke him up and she's like, yo, bro, I need you to help me take over the world. Here's a little update on history. they no longer worship us like they once worshiped like gods. They now worship machines. So we will make a machine to destroy them. And their machine is basically a bunch of random parts. Oh, my God, not just RIPD, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Part 2 that was just in theaters. With the what's it called? General Krang's something dome where all the parts were like in this big whirlwind up in the sky. But it was just a bunch of parts, a bunch of pieces of metal flying in a Sharknado in the sky. Like, they didn't do anything. She's like, we're going to build a machine. It's just a whirlwind of apocalypse is all it is.
Stop shooting stuff into the sky, bad guys.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so weird. And then remember whenever her brother affected metal things like cars and buildings with his tentacles, whatever, like the weird black monstrous things that Charlize Theron was creating in Snow White and the Huntsman out of nowhere. But like whenever she touched them, they totally like change form and like they've been stretched or whatever, like melted and pulled and reformed and warped. Like, none of this stuff mattered. It didn't do anything. I don't understand.
Stop wrecking helicopters and let everyone walk away from it unscathed. And how, wait, so, okay, I guess we're getting ahead of ourselves, but so at the end of Amanda Waller, you see her in a scene where she's been upside down for about, 6 hours. And her eyes and her ears and no, yeah, her ears and mouth have been loaded up with something. And I mean, she obviously has been affected deeply. Then later on, she kind of walks out like, I'm back. It's like, what? I don't understand how she lived.
I think Deadshot said it like, how are you still alive?
Oh, okay.
Remember in Blade when Steven Dorff was draining his blood? And then, like, he was all weak, but then he fell in that pool of blood, and he comes out, and he's just, like, better than ever after 3 seconds. That's basically what happened to Amanda Waller.
Yeah. Yeah. This movie needed a Fury lunch scene. So David Ayer directed a movie called Fury. It's a World War II tank epic. In the middle of it, there's this really amazing character piece involving everybody in the tank and a couple women who are in this maybe French or German town. But it explains their dynamics perfectly. And they talk about the past and the present and everything like that. And it explains all their characters. And it's not pretty. It's ugly. And Suicide Squad didn't have that.
Hey, speaking of lunch, I think I'm why don't we just take a quick lunch break?
All right, I'm going to eat some ribs.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a Red Bull.
Yeah. All right, guys. We'll see you in a little bit.
Robert.
Yeah.
Best Charlton Heston line of all time.
Where's the butter?
Fantastic. That was that's a good one. John, you. He can't recover. Well, anyways, go to sharkdropper.com, www.sharkdropper.com. Check out all of our fantastical podcasts.
I can't believe it's not butter.
It's a little too late for that.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I may or may not have eaten a rib. No one saw me. So
you know that song Cake by the Ocean? It should be Ribs by the Window.
Ribs by the Window. That's like what The Rock ate in that hospital scene in Furious 7 to like heal back up so he could rip out of that cast.
That's right. No, 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 no. Ribs by the Window.
So for our listeners, this is probably coming out a week later, but You guys see all that media about The Rock maybe like slamming Vin Diesel a bit on social media?
It was like a very vague Instagram post, like, oh, my male co-stars are a-holes. I'm paraphrasing.
I feel bad for Tyrese because Tyrese is like, it's not me. The Rock and I are cool. And they put a video up and they deleted it later. And then The Rock clarified it. Like, they clarified, no, Tyrese is cool.
We know he's not talking about Kurt Russell, obviously. Yeah. There's no way. There's no way.
So, reading between the lines, he was saying, no, Vin's the bitch.
Okay.
Sorry, Vin Diesel, if you're listening. I'm not saying that I think that of you.
He called him a candy ass, didn't he?
Right. That's what was in the tweet. So, like, it got me thinking, we all love the Fast and Furious movies here at Movies, Films, and Flicks, but Mark is especially a fan of Too Fast, Too Furious.
Greatest Fast movie ever!
And And I'm especially a fan of, like, those zany Sharknado kind of movies. Mark, remember the movie Lava Lantula?
No.
It was about a giant tarantula that spewed lava on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Oh, no.
Oh, brother.
Yeah. And it had, like, I think it was Donnie Wahlberg was in it or someone. But either way, so they're making a sequel to it. And it's called Two Lava, Two Lantula.
We hungry.
I'm not kidding, man.
It's
Two
I hate
Lava,
it.
Two Lantula.
Folks, anything that messes with the honor of Too Fast, Too Furious has to fist fight me.
Two Lava, Two Lantula.
Can I just skip the first movie and go straight to the sequel?
Yeah. I mean, it gets points.
You know what's funny is that I didn't see Lavantula, but now it makes me want to see that movie. Because they're decidedly going the Sharknado route, whereas I didn't necessarily know that for a fact on the first movie. You know, they make like Croctopus versus Wolf Shark or whatever, and they're zany, but they're not Sharknado zany.
I've turned off Sharknado within the first 10 minutes.
We can't all have good taste, Mark.
I think that movie, that movie tried to be bad.
Yeah.
But you can't make a bad movie if you try to be bad.
Right.
It has to be, you have to make a good movie and have it, and then it turns out bad to have it be truly bad.
They just keep making them and they just keep making more money.
It's faux bad.
Yeah.
And I think faux bad ain't bad. If you try to make it good and it's bad, then that's real bad.
I feel like there's a double or a triple negative going on. I'm trying to track where the good quality or bad quality is in there.
Good bad was made to be good.
Oh dear. I've gone cross
eyed. Oh my god.
Hey, speaking of going cross eyed, I think it's time for another list of questions.
Right, All right, so our third question is actually themed for this episode. It comes from Neil from Greenville, South Carolina. Neil's a repeat question provider. He asks, which Suicide Squad is better, the comic book squad that we see in the movie or the Suicide Squad from The Life of Brian?
Life of Brian. They have one simple mission. They chase everyone away, and then they kill themselves. That'll teach him or something.
And then they stab themselves.
Can you imagine Amanda Waller trying to wrangle these guys together?
I put together a team, but they killed themselves. I think they shouldn't call it the Suicide Squad. They should call it the Slightly Bruised Squad.
You know, they didn't really ever get, but like all their injuries were really sustained from like dodging death and getting banged up, wasn't it?
Yeah, the banged up squad.
Like, oh, here comes her brother's tentacle. I'm going to jump out of the way and bang on the concrete.
Yeah, they aren't trained tumblers. When they tumble, they're going to get bruised.
I mean, it's not like Underworld Awakening where Celine just gets thrown all over the place.
A stupid, stupid werewolf.
I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah, so like, I think the Suicide Squad from Life of Brian.
So just overall, like, just that's like a big sweeping, like, they're better.
Because they actually accomplish their mission.
That's a fair criticism.
And there's a great punchline, and they're an actual, literal Suicide Squad.
They succeeded at the suicide of the squad.
Their mission was 100% successful.
So, like, in the movie, their mission was 100% ridiculous. Like, I don't know. Laz, how did you feel about these two Suicide Squads?
Well, it's weird comparing these two squads because I didn't think I'd ever have to do it. But it was interesting. It was an interesting thought exercise. In the end, I'm just like, no, I give up. I don't know.
It feels like something you'd be challenged with in a philosophy class where today's chapter is on film.
I think it'd be interesting if you could just like mash them together, right? Just have them like one big Suicide Squad. I want to see like the interactions between like the different members. Like, how does Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn interact with the guys from Life of Brian?
I mean, they wouldn't talk much because the other guy, they just kill themselves.
Yeah, that's true.
So how you doing today?
Huh?
I'm going to stab myself later.
Oh, yeah. Nice, nice.
What do you want to drink? They probably do want drinks.
Yeah.
The Suicide Squad. They're probably expensive, too.
Which Suicide Squad?
The one that kills themselves, because they're like, well, I might as well have a good drink.
That makes sense. You see, because in Suicide Squad, they go to the bar. That's what I was thinking.
They tried to do a Fury lunch scene in Suicide Squad, but they made it a bar scene.
Yeah. I don't know.
So what do you think, John? What Suicide Squad do you like?
Like, for me, I think that the movie that we just saw, the Suicide Squad movie, had better characters, but I think that the action was better and that the story made more sense in Life of Brian.
Yeah, there we go.
For like, because those guys, like, we don't know anything about those Life of Brian, Monty Python, Suicide Squatters, right? And, like, you know, listeners, if you're confused, by the way, I should have said this. There, if you type Suicide Squad Life of Brian in YouTube, you will, like, first hit, get like a 90-second clip of this squad from that Monty Python movie. But, like, they just kind of come on the scene, they do their thing, and then it's almost like a salute with suicide in front of an up on the cross Brian, whatever. Like, it's, I don't know. Action made more. You know what's funny is that, as stupid as it was, I cared more about the action in the Monty Python movie.
And you know what? If they took this Suicide Squad and made a Suicide Squad movie, a DC Suicide Squad movie, there would have been like 48 flashbacks. So it would have gone from 90 seconds to about 90 minutes. And there would have been a whole buttload of flashbacks.
That's exactly how they made this movie.
Yeah, exactly. You know, why couldn't they just... I hate it. Just tell a movie and let us learn about the characters. Like, Saving Private Ryan, that they didn't have flashbacks. There was times when they told heartbreaking stories. You know what? Saving Private Ryan's a better Suicide Squad movie.
Whoa, hold on. You're trying to compare Suicide Squad and Saving Private Ryan. I think you're being a little bit unfair there.
Yeah, you're right.
Suicide Squad.
But, like,
yeah,
like, you don't need that. Like, David Ayer is a good director. I've liked End of Watch, and he's created very likable. You know, End of Watch, it was almost like a family. Fury, they were like a family. Not the other stupid movie, Sabotage. That was like a dumb movie. But
that was terrible.
I think there was like no, you know, if this guy's saying I have a new family, you should feel that way. But it's not like that at all.
Like, he was just sloughing them off the whole time.
Yeah.
Hey, Pyro, you should help us. Hey, Pyro, you're part of the team. Hey, Pyro, we're trying to save the city. I'm just going to sit here. I'm not using my powers again. Blah, blah, blah. He was almost like a young Nick Nolte, just...
Oh, man, if Nick Nolte could explode into fire...
I feel like he does periodically.
Wait, hold on. I think... the answer to our listener question was... Life of Brian.
Yes. But we were still doing a listener question.
No, I think we kind of segue into Nolte. I think we segued back into the topic, which is Suicide Squad. But no, continue.
Neil, your answer is a flaming Nick Nolte.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right.
But no, Mark, continue. I think we segued back into the
topic. Okay, aside from my really weird Saving Private Ryan comparison, but you didn't need the flashbacks.
Yeah.
You don't need them. It's like almost like a Scooby-Doo, like, and then like they'd go to something else. Just tell the story and let us meet the characters.
Yeah, I will say that it was, I mean, I do agree with you. I think flashbacks are a cheap way to, you know, fill or give character depth. But I feel like it was, what, the first 15 minutes when they were like employing like all those flashbacks for all the characters. Like, that was actually fun to watch. You know, it was just like, but you knew, like, the thing is, like, you knew the movie couldn't sustain that. It was just like, yeah, this is going to kind of peter out, like, a little bit.
Well, and I enjoyed it because we were getting to know these characters. And we were getting to see those characters in their element where they weren't being constrained by Amanda Waller's character. But, like, I totally get the flashback, you know, criticism, because while I was having fun getting to know these characters, at the very same time, when I reflect on... So Harley Quinn, again, Margot Robbie to me, if I had to name one single star of this movie, it'd be her. Just if I had to name one, even if she just won by a little bit over Will Smith and the actor who does the special agent. I don't know, the guy from Narcos who plays Rick Flagg. But those guys are pretty, you know, good presence too. But I'd pick Margot Robbie as my star. And in her flashbacks, like when they're showing her interviewing or psychanalyzing the Joker, like that's not a good, important, or valuable scene. You could have just told us. And like around that private dinner table at the restaurant with Amanda Waller and those other people, right? And then like when the Joker is zapping her head to make her crazy like him, again, not necessary. In that club scene where he tries to offer her to somebody, make that present.
Yeah. Did he try to throw her in some eggnog?
Oh, you talking about that?
I don't know what that was. When she said, "I'd die for you," and he says, "Why don't you? That's too easy. I want you to live for me." And he pushes her in. I thought it was going to be like piping hot glue or acid. And so she lands in it, and it's like she's drowning or something because she's not moving. And then he just jumps right in after her and pulls her out. I don't know what that was.
He didn't even land on her.
I think it was like white gravy or something.
What was it last?
I think it was like white gravy or something.
Yeah, but it was like the turkey stuff they do for microwave dinners.
Someone get
fatal.
The biscuits.
It shouldn't have been fatal. And then like, I think they were trying to do a throwback of Jack Nicholson falling into the vat and it messing up his face. Except
this is eggnog.
Except they failed that. Yeah, that was like, and it must have just been warm because when he came out of it, like he wasn't like, and trying to get out. He was just like holding Margot Robbie like, "I've saved you," or "you've been baptized," or I don't know.
And who put those knives down around the Joker?
He did.
How long does that take?
Dude, that was some aviator OCD.
I mean, Laz, it's the Joker.
You used to do that, Laz. How long did it take you?
I mean, at first it took me like the whole night, but as I got better at it, I think like three hours.
3 hours?
Yeah.
That scene, and just in a screenshot, is really cool. As a scene with the camera moving, I actually was watching that thinking, like, how much time and thought would it take to do that? That's a very decisive thing to do when you're angry or mourning. Like, again, it made me think of Leo DiCaprio in The Aviator when he locked himself into a room for 4 months.
Now, next to being a fur trapper and a revenant, I think the worst job ever is working at that penitentiary.
Oh, yeah.
Like, remember Killer Croc killed that guy and he's like, "Was that the new guy?"
Was
yeah, the guy. They like redshirted him.
Like, you're just getting like punched in the face. Captain Kangaroo Boomerang jumps out, hits a guy. Slipknot hits a woman. Like, people are just getting beat up left and right. Why would you work there?
The benefits must be really good.
Really well.
Yeah.
I mean, you assume it's a government job, so you know the benefits must be amazing. I think.
I mean, like having health insurance doesn't make up for the fact that I got to wrestle with an alligator every day.
Yeah, but I mean, they're probably on the GS pay scale. Like, you know, what if he's a GS 13 making 83 grand his first year before cost of living modifier?
But would you take that job if you knew you had to deal with Killer Croc?
Honestly, during the interview, I'd probably think that sounded cool, not really understanding the magnitude and danger. So, like, I might take the job, but then after I take the job, I might, like, kind of find a reason to resign.
Yeah.
Like, ugh.
He liked it. He seemed to strangely like that job, though.
Well, because he sent all the rookies in. So the guy from Mindy Project, I forget his name. But there's a Jim Perrick, who I like a lot. No, wait, that's another guy from there. I got to Google this. But, yeah, so the guy who worked in the jail cell. So we get this scene where one of the main guards is basically taking everybody out of their cells, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's like another scene to introduce everybody, and they're beating up on Deadshot. And then Captain Boomerang, they didn't show him get out of there, did they?
No. Well, they showed him like just in a bag. Right.
How do you think they got him in that bag? Did they put some, you know, Fosters in there?
Yeah. It's like, here you go.
So Ike Barinholtz is the guard. And I think he's a really funny actor. I actually liked him as the guard. He kind of had the most personality. But he didn't really fit in the movie.
I like how they referred, hey, and they didn't need a flashback to do it, how he referred to the last time that he walked into that cell with Harley.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was the, see, and that would, if of all the things that they flashed back about Harley that we didn't need, that might be the one that I'd like to see. But even though I didn't see it, it was more effective, just in words and his face and their exchange, than all those other flashbacks that I saw with her.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. Watch 13 Assassins instead. It's completely opposite.
But. Well, the thing is that, like, you know, I saw an interesting comment online. I don't even, it might have been by you, but someone said that the insanity or, like, a Suicide Squad is incomprehensible insanity, but it's meant to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
Hmm. Yeah.
So it's one of those things. It's like, you'll regret not seeing it on a big screen, but at the same time, you might regret that you didn't save the money and wait.
Now, do you guys think there's a Marvel bias when it comes to these movies?
Explain what you mean.
Well, so a lot of DC fans wanted to shut, not a lot, I'm sorry. Extreme DC fans sent a petition, not a lot, to shut down Rotten Tomatoes because of negative DC reviews. And on the website, I broke down all of the DC as opposed to Marvel scores. And, you know, if you just look at the last two, BVS and Suicide Squad, they're low. But DC and Marvel, throughout the years, they're about the same, you know, maybe like 10 points separating them with critic scores. So they're not like, there's not really a bias. But a lot of people are saying that critics are all over Marvel films, whereas they hate DC films.
Yeah, but I mean, the DC films are trying to do in the last two films what Marvel took 8 films to do.
Yeah.
Like, Marvel took their time setting up their universe. When we first saw Iron Man, we didn't even really hear mention of anyone else until after the credits. Then we saw what was next.
Incredible Hulk. Right?
Hulk. Yeah. So then we see Hulk, and they make reference to some other agency, and then there's another end of the credits. So now they've done two connections in a movie instead of one connection in a movie, right? And then just as we go on, they refer back to the other ones. Now it's a bigger thing. They might refer to two things during the movie plus the... So, but the things that they built up, and then things get more and more familiar. And this one, we spend more time, it seems, setting up other movies than we do dealing with one story. And that's why the story sucks.
Yeah.
I think that... Again, DC is trying to catch up in just one or two movies with the level of setup that Marvel, again, did in 6 or 8 movies. This is not something that's reasonable to do.
I tell you what, I think, though, that two things happen which could be good for DC. In Batman vs. Superman, Wonder Woman, I think, was by far and away the most popular character.
Yeah.
And so everyone, I think, is... I looked online at YouTube and... The DC trailers are almost double all the other trailers combined, Kong and all that. So there's a huge audience. But the Wonder Woman movie, everyone's freaking out about. And I think because she came out unscathed from a massive film, so I think that's going to be good. And if they make a Harley Quinn movie, I think everyone loves her character so much. She's going to have to become more than just one note. But I think those characters did so well in these bad films that people, there's going to be hype for their standalone movies.
Well, and I think that the Wonder Woman movie, I hope that I'm not overreaching when I say this, but I really hope that that will be good, a better film than Batman versus Superman or Suicide Squad. But I also think it will be because it's set in a totally different time frame. Mm-hmm. And it looks like they're painting a completely different world. And so this actually feels more like a classically spun off standalone movie that may or may not link to some other things, but they're treating it more as a spin. I don't think that they're going to set up 8 yet new characters that we haven't heard of yet. Like when Batman pulls out a flash drive, sees a folder called Metahumans, and then we get a little movie trailer x3. Like, you know, that was so implanted, like uploading in the Matrix or something. I don't think we're going to get that in Wonder Woman.
I think it's going to be able to focus on the character.
And it feels like it, you know, like, again, all these other characters that you see in the Wonder Woman trailer, you can tell that they're ancillary characters. They're not getting equal screen time. Suicide Squad, holy Jesus. It's like 89 different people who are equally potentially the star of this.
And like, no one could be that bad in the Suicide Squad, too. Will Smith, his character, loved his daughter. You know, wouldn't shoot Harley. Harley, you know, stayed at the end and joined back up. Diablo, you know, he killed his family, but he didn't want to use it again. I don't know. I know nothing about.
Yeah, Uber, no, no. Right? They totally PG softened, Pixarized the Suicide Squad.
Yeah,
they were all people who you'd want to give a hug at the end.
That's right, like a nice high five.
Pretty much, man. Like, I'd let Deadshot watch my kid. And as utterly insane as Harley was portrayed at times, and her group collective in Suicide Squad, even though she wanted to get away with the Joker, she was kind of concerned with group unity and them getting out of this okay. So it's like, even though she came off as kind of really crazy at times, she had like a good heart in there. She wasn't so murderous or anything. Again, I'm saying PG Suicide Squad, Pixar parent Suicide Squad.
So the only ones I wouldn't let watch my kid are Captain Boomerang, because he's just
Croc.
Like, yeah, I think Croc would be all right.
You don't think he'd eat the kid?
Nah. I think.
And Captain, what do you think Boomerang would?
He would just get drunk and forget about the kid. And I think Rick Flagg would be too busy eating ribs. All right, we got to do this, guys. So what would your Suicide Squad name be? However, people can't come up with their own nicknames. So Lazvath, me and you, we got to come up with Levengood's Suicide Squad name.
Rubber pants. I don't know. That's the first thing that came to mind.
Okay, rubber pants.
That's the first thing that came to mind.
Why on earth? That doesn't make any sense.
What? And Captain Boomerang does?
So basically, you can't be electrocuted because you're grounded at all times.
There
That's
you go.
Terrible.
So we got rubber pants. All right, and then Levengood, what should we give Laz?
I don't know about Laz, but you're probably like high kick off. and you always walk a little bow legged because you're always lightly pulling your groin.
Wait, you can kick a flag off a skyscraper.
I just aim and kick. I can kick people's heads clear off.
So I gave you one. Laz gave me one. I think you have to name Laz.
Beef.
There
beef.
You go.
Laz is what's for dinner.
Yes.
See, basically, he can like beef up.
Yeah, like infinitely.
Yeah, like he can just beef up.
You mean like the Storm Lord in Big Trouble in Little China who exploded?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I was thinking up. Like the Hulk on steroids.
No, I think I think Biff. Like the jerky Biff from
Back to the Future
meets the blow up guy from Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, okay.
So you kind of like
that's a power jerk.
You can kind of swole up. You basically look like the Hulk from Jersey.
Okay.
So wait, I watched the Jersey Shore, and anyone who's listening, I'm just gonna say so, Ronnie.
Yeah. So Ronnie. What does he do? Gym tan laundry. GTL. So we have rubber pants, high kick, and beef.
RHB.
RHB. Rubber pants.
Rubber my beef.
So
we each get like our own like dozen flashbacks.
So wait, how did you become beef?
I think I was a vegetarian who accidentally wandered into a slaughterhouse and just fell into a vat of blood. I just beefed up from there.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, yeah. But as a child, and then like you kind of emerged like from a Mogwai to a gremlin.
Right. What about you, rubber pants?
I think that I just had a bedwetting problem as a child, and it got lucky one day when the floor got electrocuted. I don't know. Rubber pants. This feels like something out of Pinky and the Brain.
And high kicks, I was a juvenile delinquent, and I got caught stealing a sword from a mythical sensei. And he trained me in the ways of the high kick by, like, JCVD montages.
Oh, nice. All those are your flashbacks. They're just all montages.
It's basically like Bloodsport because it's all flashbacks anyway.
Speaking of JCVD, I wonder if all of our listeners know that Van Damme is going to be playing the trainer role in the new Kickboxer movie coming up.
Yeah, and Beef is the main character.
Keep an eye out for it.
Beef. Beef, rubber pants, and high kicks.
All right, guys. So, final thoughts. Suicide Squad. Anything we didn't or forgot to get to?
I'll probably buy the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I really did almost love the first 30 minutes, despite some needless flashbacks. There's no reason to specifically not see it.
Right.
Yeah.
For all its faults, I actually enjoyed this movie. I was actually entertained by it. You know, it's an interesting concept, for sure. It wasn't executed like 100%. But I think David Ayer, he's a very, very, very competent director. Like, I think he added, like, a lot of style to this movie. Like, it was a very stylish-looking movie. Like visually speaking, you were never bored, right? The story just never really held up, especially towards the end. You know, it just, for some reason, I got just flashbacks, like, the end of Ghostbusters, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just like, I thought Enchantis for some reason just reminded me of Zool or whatever.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I swear to God, when I was watching the movie, I looked over at my coworker David, who was sitting next to me when we watched it, and I actually said, "This is a lot like the Gozer fight at the top the building, except I don't care."
Yeah. So I think for me, the main feeling was that it was the Joker, actually. Not because he was a bad character. It's just like they couldn't resist the temptation to overuse him. I think if they just let the characters just kind of do their own thing, I wish I saw more interactions between, like, the different Suicide Squad members, you know? Like, I want to see, like, Deadshot and Captain Boomerang, shoot clips at each other. Like, stuff like that. Like, little different scenes like that. That would have made the movie like a million times better. So, plus they didn't really get a chance to be bad. I didn't think so.
Like, yeah, they were like never bad.
They punched a couple people in the face.
Yeah. Daddy, I know you kill people. Oh, Daddy, don't kill Batman. Oh, I love you so much. She's got to go to college. You guarantee she's going to college. Yeah. Like, it's like they just said that they did bad things.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of an all villain kind of task force is really cool. Like, the only thing that can kind of neuter that is you put it in like a post-apocalyptic setting where the bad guys are basically the good guys, and it's just like, come on, like, put them like someplace where like they gotta do their mission but they're also like evil at the same time. That would have been really cool to see.
And they can still be like, people love Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
And, like, people like Walter White. Like,
boy, and you know what? And Hannibal Lecter was insidious.
Yeah, like, people like anti-heroes. I mean, you watch The Wild Bunch. Those guys were insane.
Yeah, like, so, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a screenwriter, but you could have come up with a better idea than just, like, some big monsters attacking a city and you got to save, like this one person. Like, maybe it's, like, something more low scale. Maybe, like, the world isn't, like...
Do you think that the goody-two-shoesiness of a lot of our otherwise would-be murderous characters is because of just the heavy-handedness of the studio totally pushing this the wrong way?
Well, there's lots of stories coming out about how there's like huge studio interference. And
like,
is
this like one of those triple rewritten scripts?
Well, yeah, they made it. They did reshoots, and David Ayer originally, Slipknot wasn't in the movie that long, but he was a serial rapist. Mm. Captain Boomerang was in the movie a lot more, but he got cut out for a lot of scenes. But he was like some racist, really bad jerk.
And Harley, he like had no lines.
Yeah, and Harley hated him. Like, I guess in other cuts, Harley hated him. So they had them more unlikable, more dark. They had more of that, but they did reshoots to make it more Deadpool-y. But the problem is, you can't bring in David Ayer to do that. You got to let this guy do his work. You can't, because what happened was like a weird mishmash of styles.
I've got to say, there was nothing that felt even a moment of Deadpooliness to me.
Well, you know, like when like that random scene where she smashed the window to grab a purse.
I thought that was too abrupt to be enjoyable.
Yeah, what? Me. We're bad guys. You're like, ugh.
You know what
like,
made Deadpool great? That Suicide Squad just couldn't nail. Like, Deadpool allowed Deadpool to be Deadpool. You know, yeah. Suicide Squad, it was just like, they always had a leash on all their characters.
Yeah, I like, guess the problem is that, like, Deadpool, they went in knowing what it was going to be. They had a vision of what it was going to be. Whereas Suicide Squad, whatever vision that someone once had, it didn't walk out with even a glimmer of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are. It's too bad. You got, you know, like a tight leash by the studio, and you got, like, kind of the really bright glare from, like, the Joker character kind of overshadowing them. And it's just, it's unfortunate because, like, there's a really good movie there. You know, it just,
yeah. To any of our listeners who may be connected to Netflix, please give me at least one season of a super gritty Netflix series about the Suicide Squad that's honorable to the theme.
Yeah.
I think I don't know if it's on Netflix, but I think there's an animated movie about the Suicide Squad that's, from what I've read, like a million times better than the live-action movie. I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. It may or may not be on Netflix. I think it's called Assault on Arkham, right?
Oh, I've heard about that.
Yeah, supposedly it's really, really good. So.
Nice.
But, yeah. All right, so it's that time of the show. So before we sign off, are there any plugs we want to make?
The Lamb, www.largeassmovieblogs.com. Great people. Also, go to Movies, Films, and Flicks on iTunes. Rate, review, subscribe. Please, guys, we'd love to know what you think. Also, Lazavath just started a new podcast called Rib Eating. And he just kind of goes around the country and he eats various ribs and records it.
Yeah, but the thing is, you can't tell if I'm eating rib or not. You know?
That's right. Well, so, ooh. Yeah.
If Laz eats a rib and no one is there to hear it, does it make a smacking sound?
Yeah, I heard his episode 3. I had to turn it off after 3 minutes. It was basically just him sucking on his fingers.
You know, I dedicated that episode to you, Mark.
We've got a kowtow and pay homage to Shark Dropper Studios and their 89,000 podcasts. But
89,001.
And Lazabath for being our talented editor.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Editor, host.
I'm a true Renaissance man.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I do all the jobs well. I just do a lot of jobs. All right. Anything else?
I just throw out a little continued support. A big thanks to Crash Palace and from The Last Knock and the Frisco Kid from Loud Green Bird. They're always pretty nice with promoting our material on social media. Appreciate you guys. Listen to your stuff.
Make us associate producers.
Yeah.
Just add us. Just give us a credit in the end.
All right, guys. For my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Ribs.
John Levingood.
I want to hear The Rock call Vin Diesel a candy ass more.
Rubber pants.
I've been your host, John Lawson. Thank you so much for listening.
Wait.
And
Beef.
I've been your host, Beef. And we'll see you guys next time.
High kick.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! 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 This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.